shotglassdigital.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who's trying to figure out how to do those hollowed out eyes for his Halloween costume, Adam Farmer.
Oh, I already have my Halloween costume picked out. I don't need to worry about those hollowed out eyes. Though, I have to say, if I was going to point out anything about the ghosts, quote-unquote ghosts in this episode, the eyes are what get you.
So you're not looking for a top hat and like some fake like beaver teeth?
I'm not planning on being the mole man, as they affectionately refer to him as in the episode.
The mole man ghost is not your Halloween costume?
No, I'm not being pretense the Trevulian.
Enlighten us. What is your Halloween costume, or is it going to be a secret?
Oh, it's definitely not a secret. We are going as Peter Pan this year. And when I say we I'm meaning the entire family has different characters from Peter Pan. We're not doing a combined Peter Pan costume.
Dedication. Yeah, so yeah, you're Peter.
I'm Peter.
Okay.
That's my son's going to be Captain Hook. My daughter is going to be Tinkerbell. My wife is going to be oh goodness. What's the name of the
Wendy.
She's going to be the Windy Bird. And we're trying to talk my parents into dressing up as well. And if that's the case, I'm trying to convince my dad to be my shadow.
That would be tough to pull off. I'm surprised you're not having somebody be like the, Lost Boys, like the ones in the bear costumes and stuff.
Yeah. We thought about it. We just ran out of children. and from what I've heard, gathering children that aren't your own is kind of frowned upon.
Yeah. You could borrow a couple of mine.
Does Quinn want to be a lost boy? We'll stick a raccoon tail on him.
Oh, well, I guess we should talk about Doctor Who. That's what we're here to do.
It is an exciting month with Halloween and all, but let's get to some Doctor Who.
True. Have you yet dressed up as a doctor?
I have not. I tried to convince everybody that family costumes this year should be Doctor Who related, but I got shot down. It was my daughter's year to decide what the family goes as, and she chose Peter Pan. So
maybe next year, I think it would be cool if like everyone in your family dressed up as a different doctor.
that'd be awesome. Here, I was trying to think of like companions and stuff like that we could all go as. But yeah, we could all take a different doctor to go as.
Yes,
that would be good.
So, well, we're here to talk about the next episode of Doctor Who, the Under the Lake, with the one that we just watched on Saturday, or I watched it on Sunday. I don't know when you watched it. But we're going to be talking about that. But before we get into our review of that episode, we did want to talk about a couple of news items.
Yeah, a couple of things that have cropped up.
So what's going on out there?
The first big piece of news, I'm just going to toss this out here because that's the one that I'm most excited about. Things leaked as a rumor, and as quickly as they came out as a rumor, they were confirmed by LEGO itself that there is a set showing up here on the shelves by December. I believe like December 18th-ish, we'll be having our first LEGO set for Doctor Who on the shelf.
December 18th?
Yes.
It's the release date of The Force Awakens. So,
oh, it just says available in December. You know what? I have December 18th imprinted in my mind, so everything is happening on the 18th in December. But no, LEGO says just available in December.
In December.
So in time for holidays.
Well, that's perfect timing. Did you see the images of what's going to actually be released?
Yeah, I did. So it looks like they have it's going to be a TARDIS inside of the TARDIS with, you know, the column? that goes up and down and makes the vorp vorp sound? Is there an official name for that column?
I don't know about the column. I always just called that whole thing the console.
Yeah, so it's going to be the kind of like the framework for the console, and then the
the whoop whoop column,
the whoop whoop, the vorp vorp column.
The whoop whoop is something different. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the whoop whoop. That's previous incarnation. We're now at the vorp vorp. So we're gonna get the 12th Doctor. It looks like Clara. Unless this is an unnamed companion, but I'm pretty sure it's Clara. And then we will be getting a Matt Smith Doctor. So the 11th is tossed in there, Weeping Angels and possibly some Daleks. So they just shoved anything and everything into one box set just to make us Whovians happy.
It does look like that. Like, I'm looking at the images here. It does look like they're trying to put as much into this one little set as they can. Almost, you know, thinking, oh, well, this might be the only Doctor Who set we ever make, so let's throw a couple Doctors at them. I was kind of hoping for a full, like, set of 13, you know, maybe as a set in and of itself. 13 minifigs, the TARDIS, I'd buy that set every day.
You know what we're probably going to get? We're probably going to get the mystery bags of the minifigs for Doctor Who. I wouldn't be surprised if you started seeing those floating around. Especially with the Lego Dimensions game coming out, and then also the now box set that we have for Lego. I really hope this isn't the last one that they come out with. They could do some pretty neat things with all of the new Who Doctors, not to mention the classics. But could you imagine the Ninth Doctor with the plastic people chasing him, the plastic mannequin Lego figs chasing him?
I can imagine a lot better than that.
Oh, but that would be a good one. don't shoot me down like that. A man can dream.
I mean, they are plastic. But yeah, I think, oh man, you could totally like just mess with my brain on that one. No, but what you were saying about the minifigs, like the blind bag minifigs, that's a pretty popular thing. Actually, I have some coworkers that are big into that. Like literally they'll go to Target and they'll like, you know, feel the bags and try to figure out which minifigs inside it and collect all of them and trade them. And so, yeah, if they did a set of Doctor Who specific blind bagged minifigs, I'd be all about that. I'd buy those up and I'd get involved in the whole trading and everything. That would be amazing.
Nice. No, I have to ask just because you kind of shot down my idea. If you could have one Doctor Who Lego set, Not including the TARDIS that is going to be coming, so we're all going to be able to have that Lego TARDIS sitting on our desk or sitting on our windowsill or what have you. Not to mention the TARDIS, what Lego set would you want of the Doctor?
Silence in the Library.
How in the world would you do that?
So you have, well, I'm just saying like that setting. So like I want a River Song minifig in like the spacesuit. I want the whatever Vastra Navrava, whatever things they're called. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
The guys with the skull faces.
The Vastra Nishada?
I don't know.
Yeah, something like
that. We're the worst Doctor Who podcasters in the world right now.
it's a rough night.
Mispronouncing villain names. But yeah, like that would be a cool minifig with River, with the 10th Doctor. You know, maybe some kind of a set piece with library, you know, bookshelves, and I don't know. I think that would just
Blue
be a
TARDIS
cool...
journal.
Yeah, Blue TARDIS journal. River comes with her own sonic screwdriver. I mean, come on.
There you go. Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. The other one I think would be cool would be a set based on the 11th Doctor. Let's Kill Hitler. Was that when he has the cane?
Yep.
Sonic, and then River's there as well. I just want a River Song minifig, apparently.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know what I want? I want one of those. You know how they have the architecture Lego sets? Like really fine, detailed architecture Lego sets? I want one of those, like that style, for the face of Bo.
I'm thinking more Scarrow.
Or maybe, that would be awesome.
You know, just a full-on Scarrow architecture. But no, let's get back to the set specifically.
Yeah,
we're getting way off base and dreaming about things that are never going to happen. So this set is based on, so it's a Lego Ideas, right? So right. It's not like they're not doing a series of Doctor Who sets, at least as of now. It doesn't look like they're going to.
Right.
But this is somebody, actually a fan, created a set, and then Lego took that idea and perfected it, and then now are releasing it. And actually, I don't know how familiar you are with the Lego Ideas stuff, but like the person that actually created this, the fan that created this idea, actually gets money every time somebody buys this.
That's awesome.
So it is kind of cool. But I like the set. I think it looks really cool. I love how they, like you were talking about the console, but then that you can see the TARDIS connected to it. Like it's the backside of the door of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Like you could walk out. But then if you take the console and everything away and kind of fold, it looks like at least you can kind of fold the TARDIS up and to be a full TARDIS. It looks like the detail looks great. They have the signage on the front of the TARDIS, the police call box signage on the top, the little light on the top. So I think it looks great. I'm definitely going to buy this set. I mean, I am into Lego, so this is a no-brainer for me. When this comes out, I'm buying it. It's kind of, some of the details are a little odd. The 12th Doctor looks like he's wearing a purple jacket. And I don't know what that, is that when he first regenerated from Smith? Is that what that's all about?
I think that might be, yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense now. Because, yeah, that's Smith's final
costume. Which explains the plaid skirt.
Got it.
For Clara.
Okay, so it does. It looks like it's based on when he first regenerated and what him and Clara were wearing at that time.
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes more sense. And then he's got a sonic screwdriver, but the sonic screwdriver is like gold. Well, that's kind of interesting. I guess I've always thought of it as more of a copper color. But I mean, overall, I think the set looks really good.
Yeah, and you get a Dalek to go with it, so...
Yeah,
a win-win. And I think I think Smith's Doctor comes with a fez.
Yes, it does. It does look like it comes with a fez. I'm wondering if that actually, if you take his hair off, if you can actually put that on his head. It looks a little small.
I think if you, I think the one end of it, because he's holding it in his hand, I think the one end of it would go over the head. Just, it would look very goofy.
So I hope this is the first of many. I think if this sells well, hopefully they'll continue to make these, because I think it would be great to get a full set of Doctors, at least minifig wise.
Definitely.
So another news item that was out there is Doctor Who they've actually officially announced there's going to be another spin-off series of Doctor Who. This one obviously is not going to be the first. There's actually been a number of Doctor Who spin-off series. But they're going to do another one. Based on the details of this one, I don't know. It doesn't look like it's anything I would watch, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch. I mean, we've already seen Torchwood, which concept really cool, able to carry on with Captain Jack. This one, we were talking about it before we started recording, a little bit hesitant about it, as it's focused more on young adults, and where it takes place at is Coal Hill Elementary School. Is that right?
Yeah. It says, what does it say? Incredible dangers are breaking through the walls of time and space, and with darkness coming, London is unprotected. I'm looking at here on IGN, and it's talking about, let's see, it's going to be 8 45-minute long episodes. Showrunner is going to be Patrick Ness, who is apparently a popular young adult author. Executive produced by Stephen Moffat. So it's called Class. Did you already say that?
Yeah, okay.
No. all the stuff that happened at Coal Hill School in the actual Doctor Who series was a lot of the stuff I didn't like that much. So now they're going to put an entire series there. I think it's likely we might see some of those same students that we've seen, either background characters or, more major characters. I always forget the girl's name.
Courtney,
Maybe they'll go, get her to be kind of the lead character of the show, because she's kind of already established. There's nothing about it that sounds interesting to me. I don't think I'm the target audience, so it probably makes sense. But I wasn't even that into Torchwood, so I don't know if I'll watch this one.
Yeah, I don't foresee myself picking up a season pass for it. I think we've talked about it in the past as far as like Doctor Who and what the demographics we feel Doctor Who falls into. I have a hard time thinking like where a young adult version of this could go, other than, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea how you could spin off and still have a Doctor Who-ish show. I guess the one thing I'm imagining is the 10th Doctor Love and Monsters with the Azorbaloff. Like, that's kind of young adult-ish, right? He slowly starts eating students. They chase him around. It had comic appeal. I don't know. Maybe it's going to be more episodes like that, just taking place at Coal Hill Elementary School.
Those were all adults, though.
I know. Those were all adults. But, I mean, I could see a similar feel. Scary teacher, kind of a goofy, comical approach to the episode.
What was I? There was something I was thinking. So there was another spinoff series, the Sarah Jane Adventures or something. Was that what it's called? So that, I've never actually seen it, but I know that was kind of more designed for kids. So maybe it's something similar in, you know, something in that vein, maybe a little bit geared a little bit to an older audience than that was, but I could see it kind of having that same feel maybe.
Yeah. Now, if they did an animated series, do you think that would change it?
As far as my interest or?
Yeah, as far as your interest.
If it was still based on teenagers in a high school, probably wouldn't change my interest. No.
Okay.
I would love to see a Doctor Who animated series, but I would still want it to be about the Doctor.
Imagine that.
Once you take the Doctor out of the equation, it suddenly becomes a lot less interesting to me, and I think that's why I never got into Torchwood. I never... You know, I did try to watch a couple episodes of Torchwood. It just never caught on for me. And I was never interested in watching the Sarah Jane Adventures. So, yeah, this is another one for me that I kind of already know I'm not going to be interested in it.
Yeah.
I'll probably watch, like, if it's easily available, I'll probably, just to see what it's like, watch the first episode. And maybe it'll surprise me. But as of now, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be one that I, you know, take my time to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting nonetheless to see what they're trying to do, especially with kind of the current state of Doctor Who, current ratings and what have you. It's interesting that they're going this direction. Maybe they're trying to get hooked with the younger fan base earlier on in hopes that it will pay off down the road. But yeah, I'll probably sit back, see how it performs, maybe snag an episode here or there just to know what's going on. But I don't foresee myself going all out and trying to catch as many of it as I can.
Yeah. Was there any other big news items out there before we jump into our episode review?
I think we're pretty much good to go.
All right. So let's go ahead and talk about it. Under the Lake. This is the third episode of season 9 of Doctor Who. Let's see. Writer Toby Whithouse, director Daniel O'Hara. This one was different. This one, I wasn't necessarily in love with the first two episodes of the season. You know, I think I kind of gave it mixed reviews for the most part. I found them entertaining, but I had some pretty big issues, especially with the second part. And this episode doesn't make me any more excited about this season. In fact, this one was hard for me to get through.
Yeah, I thought the first two episodes were really, really great of the series. It got me excited. The first one I did have to watch twice, but then after the second watch through, I loved the episode. And then the second one, to me, it just fit perfectly. I loved everything that they were doing about it. Jumping into this episode, I kind of had my hesitations thinking, there's usually like a third or fourth episode lull where it doesn't quite keep up with expectations, the excitement. I wasn't sure what to expect of this. And similar to you, it took me a bit to kind of get into it. Wasn't really sure I was going to make it through it in one sitting. It didn't quite ever get off the ground for me. I'm wondering if it has to do with it being a two-parter, though. I'm still holding out hope on that one.
Possibly. One thing about Doctor Who is it's very formulaic. It has themes that constantly repeat. And I think for this one, it was just too, like, right off the bat, you know, the TARDIS lands in some sort of a structure, base, where there's scientists or military people, where they're trapped, and some outside force, which is usually alien, is going to kill them all. Like, that, how many episodes have we seen, just in the modern series, that have that exact same storyline?
Yeah, I was just thinking, when we had Bonnie Burton on the show, she mentioned kind of that same formula that we see throughout all Doctor Who, where you get separated from the TARDIS, you have someone who wants to take over, control, or destroy, and then you spend the entire rest of the episode trying to get back to the TARDIS. There's like you said, there's these common formulas that flow throughout all Doctor Who. And yeah, we kind of found ourselves in the middle of it. And usually, or at least it seems like in a lot of cases, they do enough new things or have enough elements in it that you don't quite notice the formula as much. The pacing of this, though, I think made that formula very, very noticeable. The pacing of it and even some of the character development. I'm not quite sure who the characters are, to be honest, after watching the first 45 minutes of this two-parter. I'm not entirely sure who we're dealing with. I had to start watching it a second time to even understand kind of like where they're coming from. There was one guy who's a oil consultant, and then the rest of them are military, I found out, I guess. But
scientists, yeah. Maybe. I was going to say the same thing. The characters, to me, were the problem. Like, you can keep using the same formula, and it can work. If you bring in a unique monster, if you bring in interesting characters, you know, keep using the same formula. But if you're going to keep using the same formula, don't give me stale characters. Like, there wasn't one person on this crew that I found interesting.
Right.
At least, right. Like even as recent as the Christmas special, that was a similar storyline, you know? They're trapped. Right. They're trapped in a base.
That was totally a similar story.
Yeah, and that was very recent. But at least on that, they had characters that were unique, that were funny, you know, memorable characters.
You had Santa Claus, for goodness sake.
Santa Claus showed up, you know. But this, it was just like, I mean, a couple of the guys seemed like they just were the same. You know, they had a very similar personality. I don't even remember how many. I think there were two guys. Was it two guys?
I know. That's totally the case, because you think back on the episode and you aren't even sure how many people were on the episode, to be quite honest, right? It seems like they're all the exact same person. No one's different. It started out with three guys and two women, and then one of them gets – no, four guys.
Yeah,
and
no. Two women.
One guy gets killed, another guy gets killed, and we're left with two guys and two women, not counting Claire and the Doctor.
It does seem like the characters that they decided to kill off were the more interesting of the characters. You have right. the kind of big guy at the beginning that, you know, he's kind of, you know, he seems like maybe he's in charge.
His name is Moran.
Moran, and he, you know, he's this imposing looking guy. He looks interesting. Yeah. You know, he saves somebody's life. Like, that's an interesting character. They kill him off, and then he becomes this ghost that can't talk.
Right.
And then they have that tycoon guy.
Richard.
Who, I mean, he was, I would definitely say that although the character was unique, he wasn't, the actor was pretty bad, I thought. He was such a stereotype, like, it was just almost, like, groan-worthy how much of a stereotype he was. They went as far as having him mess up his line, when he said, "Oh, that looks very valuable. Oh, I mean powerful." You know?
Yeah.
It was like, come on. Like, it was so heavy-handed that, like, oh, yeah, let's make sure that we really make this rich guy sound like all he cares about is money, and he just wants to drill oil, and he doesn't care about people or the environment, and the Doctor hates that about people, so he calls him an idiot. You know, so it was, that part was a little bit heavy-handed, so it didn't surprise me that they killed that guy. But
it gave the Doctor a chance to show personality, right? Like, those lines, yeah, it's kind of cliche, the Doctor calling him an idiot or saying, why is this guy still talking to me? But it gave the Doctor someone to play off of. Outside of that, everybody else just kind of stood around like lost puppies. they didn't really say anything. And really, it's just an entire episode of the Doctor talking to himself, which isn't always terrible, other than it kind of was slow.
Yeah. I could have used one key character on that crew that had some kind of charisma. That would have, I think, helped the episode a lot.
Yeah,
and the character probably with the most charisma was the leader of the group, the deaf woman,
Cass. Yep.
But because of the fact that she was deaf, so she wasn't vocal. That was it was hard to get the impact of her charisma.
Right.
But I did like that they did bring in that type of a character. That was a pretty cool thing to do. That's hard to do, in TV, to bring in a character like that with that sort of a disability, and have them be engaging. And, I thought it was cool to include that type of a character in the story. In fact, I think from what I was reading today, that's the first time in the history of Doctor Who that they've actually had a deaf character interact with the Doctor.
I definitely thought it was cool, especially the one time in the episode when she kind of gets up into the Doctor's face.
Yeah.
And lets him know that her first and only responsibility is for the safety of her people, and they're going to get the heck out of there, and the Doctor can stay all that he wants. That was like that was a great scene. Yeah, she had charisma. She was a really interesting character, but kind of what you said is it's so hard because the way that they have the interpreter in the mix, and in some cases there were some scenes where they're recording her and she's totally looking off in the distance because that's where the interpreter guy is signing. And so the Doctor's talking, she's staring away from the Doctor, watching the other guy as he signs what the Doctor's saying. It did add that level of disconnect for her character where you didn't seem as engaged because she's always looking off somewhere else, or as she's signing, all of a sudden they cut away to the interpreter guy so that he can tell you what she's saying. It always added that extra layer of distance. But yeah, I mean, it was a great character. She is a great character. Nothing's happened to her yet.
It didn't help either that the guy who was interpreting for her was so monotone. And like, even when she was up in the Doctor's face, he was, the way he was interpreting was just kind of like, she's not happy with you right now. Right. But it's not... he could have put a little bit more emphasis into even in his voice, I think, to maybe get the point across that she was, she was very adamant about what she was saying. But no, she was showing the emotion on her face, but in the voice, you weren't hearing it.
Right. No, totally. And but kind of along those same lines, he was somewhat of a flat character at times, especially when the Doctor says, "Who's in charge here?" And she signs, "I am." And he says, "I am." Nope. She is. It's like, seriously, man, come on, play that one a little bit better. That was actually a good comedic element amidst all sorts of other not so good comedic elements. But yeah, so the episode itself, so we have they're underwater, right? Flooded military base. They find the submarine. They're trying to figure out what it is. The first top hat bearded bucktooth mole man ghost appears, and what you mentioned, Moran, the leader of the group, pushes someone else out of the way as the engines start up on the spaceship. He gets fried, he's gone, they all run away, they flee, and he shows up as a ghost now, and then that's where the TARDIS shows up, and the first scene that we have is the Doctor talking to the TARDIS, asking the TARDIS what's wrong, like what's going on, why don't you want to be here, right?
Yeah.
What did you think about that, the idea that the TARDIS didn't want to be there?
I mean, it goes along with what we what they've kind of established with the show, how the TARDIS almost has its own personality, it's an entity, not necessarily a vehicle more than another character in the show. So, to have him kind of talk to the TARDIS like that's not anything we haven't seen before. But the TARDIS, I think there were some interesting things that happened with the TARDIS throughout the episode. We had the whole idea that the TARDIS you know, the TARDIS was trying to get away from the ghosts because they were unnatural. So it was
splinters in time.
So it was going to leave, it seemed like, you know, and the doctor had to put on the brake, you know. So that type of thing was kind of interesting. You know, I know the TARDIS kind of has a mind of its own, but it would be hard for me to believe the TARDIS would ever leave the doctor behind.
Right.
I don't know. I know we were kind of talking pre-show, trying to remember back if there had ever been a time that the TARDIS did kind of leave the doctor behind, you know, without necessarily being instructed to. I know that there's been a number of times the doctor has used the TARDIS, you know, to help a companion escape while the doctor stayed behind. That happened with the Ninth Doctor and Rose at the end of his run. But I don't know if the TARDIS has ever purposely left the doctor behind.
Yeah, and this is part of a question from someone on our Facebook page. Again, I posted just asking if anybody had questions, and Sean Heller jumped in and asked about the doctor, the TARDIS wanting to leave, and the doctor applying the handbrake so that the TARDIS can't go anywhere, which was kind of a cruel move considering the relationship he has with the TARDIS, not letting the TARDIS go away. And he asked if that had ever happened before. And it, like you said, we talked about it and we couldn't put our finger on it. And the only episode that I can think of would have been the Doctor's Wife. But even then, I don't know if it really happened there or not. Like, it left with Rory and Amy on the inside of it. But that could have been because the planet took it or made it go away. But anyways, yeah, I have this vague memory of it happening before, but I can't put my finger on exactly if or when it did happen. But yeah, kind of like what you said, it's hard to believe that the TARDIS would ever do that.
Yeah, I was reading something today. So apparently in the episode Kill the Moon, Clara uses the handbrake to stop the doctor from taking her somewhere.
Oh.
According to this this article, let me see so I can give somebody credit. So this is from, was this actually on BBC America? Anglophenia?
Okay.
British culture with an American accent. Doctor Who, 10 things you may not know about Under the Lake. And then they bring up the handbrake. There was a welcome return from the TARDIS handbrake as used by Clara to furiously prevent the Doctor from taking her off on another wild adventure at the end of Kill the Moon, and famously left on by the Doctor in order to create that asthmatic whoosh when taking off and landing, according to River Song in Time of the Yes. Angels. So, I mean, yeah, we've heard about this thing. We've heard about the handbrake, and apparently Clara used it. I don't remember that.
Yeah, she used that at the end of Kill the Moon. I can't remember that either.
But yeah, so it's, you know, it's not the first time apparently this has been used. But yeah, just the idea that the Doctor has that kind of power where he, you know, it seems like the TARDIS can kind of do whatever the heck it wants. So the fact that the Doctor kind of has this override where he could put on the brake and the TARDIS is kind of stuck wherever he wants it to be, it does seem a little, considering that the TARDIS is kind of a character more than a vehicle, it does seem a little mean that he would kind of trap her there.
And it's just trying to protect him, right? It's just trying to make sure that he's okay. He's in the best situation,
right?
But it leads me to a big question that I wanted to talk to you about, because we talked about the secondary characters. What about Clara? How did Clara strike you this episode? Because we get her where she's just like adventure hungry, she's ready to go, she's ready to take on the world, she's not scared of nothing, she just wants to be out there. How did that strike you?
That's typical Clara to me. I feel like that was pretty consistent with her character. Reminds me of the mummy on the Orient Express, you know, she's just wanting to go on another adventure. Yeah, so that her character to me fit perfectly this episode. I was curious about the interaction that her and the Doctor had when the Doctor first went back into the TARDIS.
This is a dimension in and of itself, and there's only room for one of me.
Yeah, the interaction there was a little confusing to me, so maybe you can help me understand it. I didn't get what they were talking about.
No?
No. At first, I thought he was almost like saying, hey, quit trying to act like me, you know? you're the companion, I'm the doctor. But then it almost, and then he started talking about relationships. Why don't you go find another relationship? And then you can see tears in her eyes. And then he's like, oh, did I go too far? I don't know. Like, it just, I was kind of confused about what that whole, the point of that conversation was.
Yeah. And that's kind of what caught my eye. Like, yeah, Claire has always been like wanting to go on the next adventure, but it seems like in this episode, it was just amped up. Like, she not only wanted to go on another adventure, but she didn't have like the natural fear or the natural, I don't know, for lack of a better way of putting it, respect for the situation that they were finding themselves in. And the doctor was puzzled. And that interaction there, it kind of felt like similar to what you were saying. Like, the doctor is saying, simmer down. Like, I'm supposed to be the one that's running out there, jumping at the opportunity to go crazy, to dig into the new situation, to explore, to save the planet, what have you. And you're supposed to kind of like come along with me, not be the one spearheading. And then she talks about like, well, you were just going on about ghosts like a kid that just ate too much sherbet. And then that's when he's like, hey, you need a new hobby. Like, that's what you need. Like, you need to not be chasing after the next monster. You need a hobby. Let's fight, try, or a relationship. You guys love relationships. I think it was supposed to just like, I don't know, highlight to the fact for us that Clara has kind of gone off the deep end. Like, even at the start of the episode, like where she says that they spent so many odd weeks with the people that celebrated the new year, she left her sunglasses there and possibly part of her dignity.
I think she said most of her dignity.
Most of her dignity. It's like, Clara is no longer like a companion. I don't know. She's something else entirely. I'm just interested to see what becomes of it. It seems like they made a pretty big effort to highlight this episode, even in that interaction between her and the doctor. I'm wanting, like, she's wanting a high five from the doctor when they're like, oh, we found out that like something terrible is going on here. High five. And the doctor leaves her hanging and gives her that sideways glance. Like, what are you doing? And she's like, no, don't leave me hanging. I'm curious if they did that on purpose, because she just, like, she has no fear now. Like, nothing is it a result of losing Danny Pink? Like, does she have nothing left to live for?
That's all she had to live for. Maybe. Yeah, it'll be, I think maybe they're just kind of setting us up for what's to come with this character.
Yeah. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe they're finally making Clara interesting.
I've never found her not interesting. It's more her personality that's always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But I think now that Danny Pink's out of the picture, she's much more tolerable for me. I think because there's no one being directly affected by the way she's acting right now.
Yeah.
Other than the doctor, and the doctor can handle himself. But when you have this poor innocent man like Danny Pink that's just getting, you know, just tossed around by her and emotionally, that's when I didn't like her character in last season, because it's just like, man, like, I just didn't like the way she was treating Danny. And so that, to me, made her an unlikable character. But now that Danny's out of the picture, you know, she's much more entertaining to me. No one's being hurt by the fact that she's running away with the doctor all the time, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so that's our 3 minutes of Danny Pink.
There you go. We cut it down. It's progressively getting shorter.
Yeah, we're eventually going to phase it out. But, you know, right now, I think that may have actually only been like 1 minute, so we'll call that the 1 minute of Danny Pink, and then eventually it'll be 30 seconds, and until they bring him back, and then we can just restart the whole 5 minutes again.
Yeah, there we go. Until he shows back up in the last episode and reignites all the flames of passion. So back to the story. So they end up running away from ghosts the entire episode.
Let's talk about the ghosts.
Yeah.
Let's
talk about this. Yeah.
So we have this I guess, new monster, as they like to call him in Doctor Who. And it's these ghosts. They look odd. They have hollowed out faces or hollowed out eyes. Originally, the doctor says they're not ghosts, but then he says they are ghosts. And he's pretty, you know, happy with the fact that he's
excited about it.
Finally met a ghost. What about these is it like all his explanation for it is like, oh, they only come out at night and this and that, and like he's like, oh, they're definitely ghosts. Like, in all of his experience and all of these things that seemed like ghosts, you know, we've come across a few of them now, and they never turn out to be ghosts. Like, they always turn out to be some kind of alien or something. So, like, what about these seemed more ghost-like than other things that he's come across? I'm not buying it. I don't think they're ghosts.
Yeah, and I was trying to like reconcile that in my mind as well. And the only thing that I could come across is like the position that the doctor's in. And this might be totally overthinking it, and you can feel free to call me a fool after I'm done with my quick thought, was that the doctor has come so close to death, that he himself is excited about the possibility of there being something that could happen after death, if that makes any sense. So like he's just utterly giddy that there's, you can ask them like, did it hurt? Do you ever get hungry? What is it like? Like those questions. That's the only thing I could think of, because like you said, like any other instance that we get something that is remotely supernatural in the world of Doctor Who, it's explained away through either science or aliens. And this is the one instance where the doctor's not trying to do that. So what's different other than the fact that the doctor has come so close to death? He still has his confession dial in his pocket. We know that the confession dial is going to come into play in later episodes. So is the doctor dealing with his mortality through an excitement that there might be something potentially after death in the form of ghosts? I don't know. That's like probably way too out there, crazy, off the cuff theory, but that's the only thing I could think of.
I mean, even in his explanation as to what these things are, or maybe not what these things are, but what's coming, like they're trying to send out a signal to something. There's a spacecraft involved. They find this.
Their brains are rewired through that text scrubbed into the side of the spaceship.
They find like the stasis chamber, you know, where they think the pilot's at. So, I mean, everything's pointing to aliens. You know, there just happens to be these, you know, these creatures that are walking around that look like people that, you know, were alive before. But I mean, you would think the doctor would just jump to a different conclusion, like, oh, you know, these aliens are just projecting this into our heads, or these aliens have, you know, created this whatever to make us think that there's ghosts. Like, the fact that he actually has jumped to the conclusion that they're ghosts, to me, just seems way, way out of character for the doctor. He never does that. So, I don't know. I think my hope is, because this first episode to me as a standalone was just bad. Like, everything about it, the characters were boring, the monster was not interesting to me. But what I'm hoping for is that when we get to part two, that some of these questions are answered, and maybe there's some kind of clever twist that we're not seeing. Maybe some of these characters right now that are boring are going to have some major character development and become interesting. So my hope is that we're just seeing the first half of a much better story, and I'm crossing my fingers that it all comes together.
I'm gonna take a step back from that, because the ghosts to me, the quote unquote ghosts, are interesting, but in this first episode, they're unfulfilling. Like, we have no answers about them other than the fact that they are there. They can only mouth what they're saying, and they interact with metal objects very weakly. Like, we don't know anything else about them. So I was hoping to know a little bit more about what they are, but they are the possibly the only intriguing aspect of the entire episode that has me looking forward to the next episode. They have me interested enough that I'm going to watch that second half of it to figure out what they are and where they come from. But they were unfulfilling. It's not like I thought, oh wow, those things are so great, because I have no answers on them. I feel like I know nothing more about who they are or where they come from. But
Well, so the big thing that happens in the episode is the ghosts actually start to, you know, they start to figure out how to manipulate the whatever bait,
drum.
yeah, the base that they're on, the underwater base. They start to open up, you know, chambers and stuff to, they kill the one dude who goes out and tries to find the thing. I'm not thinking of any specific terms right now.
They open doors, they kill open, the dude.
They do stuff.
They do bad stuff.
They learn to push buttons. No, but they kill the one dude by pushing a button. They push another button that opens up, you know, the floodgates and lets the water into the place. So they're becoming a real threat. And in the end, they do open up the base to the outside. The water comes in and separates the doctor from Clara.
Right.
So the doctor, you know, is talking to her, saying, "Hey, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm gonna come back and get you, but I'm gonna go back in time and try to figure this whole thing out."
Right.
Which is cool. That's like, okay, that sounds interesting. Yeah. Then we see Clara, you know, they go into, like, I guess the lunchroom or wherever that was, the cafeteria. They look out the window, and then lo and behold, there's another ghost, and who is it? It's the doctor. And that was kind of a, like, whoa kind of moment for me, because it was just like, I guess it was a little unexpected, and then it's just like, oh, that's interesting, and then the episode ends. So then they just leave you hanging there. I mean, obviously the doctor's not really dead, but, which makes me even think even more that these things aren't really ghosts. You know, there's some other explanation to them, but it does lead into the next episode, which I think what they're setting up does seem like it could be pretty interesting. Get off this base. You know, we saw the preview. They're actually going back to this, you know, this base before it was flooded. You know, so we're going to get to see, you know, we're going to see these same characters outside of this environment, which I think might help.
Right. We're going to see two of the remaining four characters outside of the environment. We have O'Donnell, who is the one that was excited to meet the doctor, who is ecstatic that the doctor was there. She loved his work. And we're going to meet the scientist, or have the scientist with us, who wanted to run, who was the first one proposed it was an alien spaceship and that they were ghosts. So they're going to be hanging around with the doctor, whereas Clara is stuck inside the drum with Cass and her interpreter. So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, it does, like you said, that we might have just gotten essentially the intro in the first half under the lake. And when we get to before the flood, that's where things will probably get interesting. We have some promo pics from the next episode. And I have to say, of all the creatures that I've seen within Doctor Who, whatever this monstrosity is, that's going to be showing up in the next episode, it looks very Predator-esque. So it's going to be cool to see that thing showing up. And we have to figure out why the Doctor was floating around outside the sub, or outside of the underwater base, with hollowed out eyes, like he too has been killed. So yeah, it should be interesting. I'm intrigued. I want to know. And I'm really hoping that this next episode takes off and is fantastic. And then I can watch Before the Flood, or Under the Lake, again, and be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is a solid episode.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a very, it's not like a straightforward type of story. There is a lot of mystery left. There's a lot of pieces that they're kind of hinting at. You know, the text on the side of the ship. You know, the these ghosts that are unexplained. The fact that the doctor is now, you know, one of them. You know, what's inside of that stasis chamber that they found. So I mean, there's all these mysteries that I think with the next episode, when it all does come together, it does seem like there's a lot of effort being put into, you know, almost like this puzzle that's being put together. And when they figure it out, it may have a really satisfying ending. Based on the preview images that you were just referring to, it does look like some of the stuff that's coming up, you know, like the monster that you were talking about. It does look like there's some pretty cool stuff coming up. So I am excited to see how it all turns out. I want to know. I haven't lost interest in this story. I just need conclusion to it, I think. because the setup was boring. But hopefully the finale is going to make it worth it.
Yeah, it would be good. It would be good. It might be one of those ones that we have to go back and rewatch a couple times to get the full scope of it. But I mean, there were the fun moments, like the prompt cards that the doctor pulled out of his pocket when he had to console the others for the death of their friend. I mean, there's elements like that, which funny elements, didn't expect it, but there weren't enough of those, I feel like, to rescue this episode as a standalone. Whereas with the first episode, Magician's Apprentice, it although it was a two-parter, it could stand on its own. I didn't feel like I needed the second part entirely.
Right. I mean, they started out with a bang, really, with the Magician's Apprentice and Which is Familiar. You got Davros, you got Skaro, you got Daleks, you have Missy. I mean, it's all, they came in guns blazing at the beginning of the season. So almost any storyline that followed that up would kind of come across as a bit of a letdown. So.
Which leads me to my last character question, the Doctor. We talked about his personality, the first episode, second episode. You loved it the first episode. He started to go down the second episode. Where do you feel like he is on this third episode?
He's kind of back to season 8 Doctor for me.
Okay.
He's back to that, everything funny he says is typically mean. He's saying rude things to people. He called that guy an idiot. He's got to have his cards so he can relate with humans. He's definitely not the Smith, friendly doctor. He's back to that, 12th Doctor mean old man. So I kind of miss what they were doing. I was hoping that what they were doing in that first episode was kind of showing us where the doctor was going, but it seems like that was just kind of a very temporary thing, and the doctor's kind of back to mean old man.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I wouldn't say that he's back to mean old man. I don't think he's back all the way to series eight, but I'm wondering if it's just a reflection of Moffat writing the first two, and now we have a totally different
That's true too, yeah.
guy writing for the third one. But he didn't seem quite the doctor that he was the first two episodes. He's on like this steady slope downhill. I was kind of expecting that you wouldn't have been madly in love with the doctor that you found in this episode.
I'm not gonna lie, a lot of the jokes even are falling flat for me. Like the cards thing, I kind of didn't really laugh at that.
What about the peanut allergy joke? Did you last
I
laugh at the
did. I
peanut
yeah, I
allergy
did.
joke?
I snickered at that one.
Okay, good, good.
Snickered. Get see what I did there. So let's talk about.
The
We had
Sonic?
another question, right?
Yeah, we
All
did.
right. Let's answer this last question.
Okay. Okay, yeah,
You
I'll
do
read
it.
it.
Yeah.
Okay. One of our listeners, also a very active participant on our Facebook page, Kenny Crowley Jr. The question everyone keeps asking, it seems, Sonic screwdriver or Sonic sunglasses, which do you prefer? Where are you going? You posted the video on our Facebook page of Moffat's explanation for Sonic sunglasses, which I don't know how you felt about it. I kind of loved his explanation of it. Like, sometimes you just have to be heretical.
It was
Sometimes
so
you just have to
smug.
use, I know,
He's
but I
like,
loved
it
it.
came across as I'm the guy writing Doctor Who now, and I'll do whatever the hell I want to do. That's how it came across. I don't know. Like, I get where he's coming from. That sometimes you have to kind of break things down a little bit and do some new things. But I know we talked about it last episode too. But I feel like just there's certain elements of Doctor Who that just need to stay, and I feel like the Sonic is one of those things. Now, it does seem like based on Moffat's video that we watched, that it doesn't seem like it's going to be like a 1 or 2 episode thing. It sounds like these Sonic sunglasses might stick around for maybe the whole season, and he may get a new Sonic eventually, or maybe the next Doctor will have a Sonic. But it didn't seem like Moffat was like, oh, it's just kind of like a thing that the doctor's doing temporarily. It almost sounded like he was saying, just get used to it.
Oh no, it definitely sounded like he's saying get used to it. He essentially said that we forgot that the sonic screwdriver honestly used to be a screwdriver that made a sound, and there wasn't anything special about it. And so it's kind of like his joke, it sounds like. Like the joke is that he brought us back and we have sunglasses that don't do anything, but they make a sound and we're just going to call them Sonic sunglasses. And what he said was like, I'm sure the screwdriver will be back at some point. It's like, but it didn't sound like there was any definite answer there. So I feel like Sonic sunglasses are here to stay. They had an interesting twist on it this episode. Definitely didn't feel like they were Sonic's sunglasses. I felt like if he had a screwdriver, he could have popped open those flood doors without any problem.
Maybe, and that's, I mean, I could see that being maybe a purposeful twist to the Doctor, where they're saying, hey, he's like he's too powerful, you know, he can get himself out of so many situations because he has a Sonic or he has the TARDIS, so let's take one of those things away from him, so they can make more interesting stories where he can have, you know, a time where he gets trapped behind a door that typically he'd be able to open. Which, if that's the case and that's what they're trying to do, I'm on board for that. But if you're saying the way if Moffat had explained it that way, you know, I think I would have accepted it more. But the fact that he was just kind of like, oh, well, I do what I want to do and just deal with it, at least that's my translation of the video, it's a little harder to swallow than if he had just said, oh, you know, this makes it so we can make much more interesting stories. Then I'd be like, oh.
Well, thinking back on it, he did say, like, we forgot it used to be just a screwdriver that made noises, and it's evolved into something that basically does everything.
Uh-huh.
He did say that part of it, and maybe that is part of the underlying reason. Like, it's not a very good story piece.
I'm trying to defend Moffat.
Believe you me, Moffat doesn't need me to defend him. I don't think he cares if anybody can defend him, himself included. He has no defense because he needs no defense.
Yeah, so I guess to answer Kenny's question, Sonic screwdriver over Sonic sunglasses every day of the week.
Yeah, I would probably go the same unless they come up with some pretty sweet features of these Sonic sunglasses. I think I'm going to have to stick with the Sonic screwdriver. Too cool piece of, it shows up in every geek infographic along with things like lightsabers and like blaster pistols. Like, it's on par with pop culture in those ways.
Exactly. So, like, what if you took away Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, you know? One day Luke Skywalker is just like, I don't feel like using a lightsaber anymore. You know, that's how I feel about this. It's like, that's an element to the character.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty much. Well, did we cover the episode? I kind of feel like we did. I don't think we talked about it all that much, but I kind of feel like that's kind of the episode in a nutshell. There wasn't much to talk about.
Yeah, we jumped around a little bit, but I think we hit all the main points with, you know, the different characters and, you know, some of the major plot lines. I think we'll be able to do a more thorough review even of this first episode once we see the second episode.
Yeah,
and kind definitely. Of tie it all together. So I think for definitely. Now we've probably said enough.
Okay. Well, surprise! 7 questions for you.
Oh, wow. You really did surprise me. Usually I just have to pretend that I'm surprised because you tell me before the show. But yeah, I had no idea that you were doing this.
Yeah, I'm totally surprising you. So are you ready? Yes or no answers only.
I'm ready.
Okay. Are you afraid of the ghosts?
No.
Should you be afraid of the ghosts?
Yes.
Do we know why the ghosts can move only at night mode?
No.
Do you care for any of the characters?
Any. Yes.
Have you ever listened to Peter Andre's song Mysterious Girl?
Never heard of it. No.
Did the Sonic screwdriver ever connect to Wi-Fi?
What? Yes.
Will we ever know what the ghosts truly, really are?
Yes.
Okay. Those are your 7 questions.
Yep.
Mysterious Girl, he mentioned it. He said that it was an earworm. He couldn't get it out of his mind for 2 weeks. I've never listened to Mysterious Girl. I need to listen to Mysterious Girl. The Sonic sunglasses, they can connect to Wi-Fi. The girl said that she was connecting to the Sonic sunglasses Wi-Fi signal so that she could see what the Doctor was seeing. I didn't know if the sonic screwdriver ever connected to Wi-Fi.
I don't know if they've ever stated that it has, but I just assume, you know, that it would. So that's why I said yes.
And we have no idea why the ghost could only move at night mode. And I don't think we ever will, to be quite honest. Like, that whole list of questions that the doctor asked, like, what's different? And they go through all the explanations of, like, what is different at night mode? And then he just, like, goes past it and says, oh, we're just going to catch a ghost. It's like, why? It just seems like one of those story elements. Like, why can they only interact with metal items? Why?
I think that will
they only move at night. Do you?
Yeah.
Do you think that?
I think they're going to explain why they can only... They've made such a point of that they can only interact with metal, that I think there will be some sort of a explanation for that. I don't think that's just a throwaway. I think they may even explain why they can only walk around in night mode, too. I think there will be an explanation in the next episode why the way that these creatures are perceived makes us think that they're ghosts. You know?
Okay.
So I think there will be some explanation to that stuff. There usually is. Like, I know when we were, what was the episode where we kind of disagreed about if they actually gave us the explanation to
the thing under the bed?
Yeah.
Listen,
like that whole episode, and when we got to the end of it, you were like, oh no, I feel like it was kind of up in the air, and I was like, no, I think it's very definitive. So I think that's going to be kind of maybe the similar thing with this. The way this wraps up, I think there's going to be a definitive scientific or alien explanation to everything that we've seen.
I'm just going to toss this out there. I went back and rewatched that episode. I still have no closure about what is under that sheet.
We need to watch it together.
We so do.
So we can talk through it. I'll talk you through it step by step. Why you're wrong.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was just another student.
It can't be another student.
It was all in the doctor's head.
Great episode.
Yeah, that was a great episode. I loved that episode, and it definitely, I need to rewatch it because it had some good stuff in it. But yep. I think for this episode we are good to wrap up. What do you think?
Agreed.
All right. Yep. So as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. If you enjoy our show, we'd love for you to head over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast. We're also on Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. Just search for Bad Wolf Radio. You'll find us. We're the one with the black and white logo. And you can send us an email at any time. We don't get enough emails, so if you get bored one day and want to send somebody an email, send it to us, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to read your email on the show or just respond to you. About any feedback that you have for us. And until next time.
Later days!